Hello, good morning, good afternoon, depending on where you are. This is the online conversation that Creating the Future is hosting with Christy McGill and Rhonda Larch, talking about generosity and gratitude as a way of being in our work, which I'm very, very excited to be part of today. My name is Hilde Gottlieb. I am the Acting Chief Mission Officer at Creating the Future, and this is the first in what we're hoping is going to be a series of online conversations about just sort of meaty topics that fit in with our mission. Let me share a bit of our mission. Our vision at Creating the Future is a world where everyone is living well, individually and collectively, where we all are bringing out the best in each other, in our organizations, and in our communities. And so our mission over the next several years, and we intend to accomplish our mission, is to see that everybody everywhere knows how to bring out the best in each other, and that we do that naturally in our day-to-day. And so there is nothing more wonderfully bringing out the best in each other than working from a place of generosity and gratitude. So I'm just really excited about today's conversation. For any of you who are watching, welcome, first of all. You can participate in this conversation by tweeting to the hashtag CTFuture. And if you're watching on that blog page there, you will see the Twitter stream right next to you. You can actually tweet right in there. It'll ask you to authorize your app, and you should be able to go. But we do want to hear from you, your questions, your thoughts, whatever's perking for you. And again, that hashtag is CTFuture. If you don't include the hashtag, we won't see it. We'll see it later, and we may be able to respond then. The one thing I do want to share with you is that we're really glad that we did a registration for this, because so many people have registered that we're going to keep an eye on the Twitter stream. We're going to answer as many questions as we can and incorporate your wisdom into the conversation as much as we can. But we've been talking, the three of us, about the fact that this conversation, this hour, is just the start. And so as you've got comments at the blog and as you're tweeting, we're just going to keep going, and we promise that we'll answer things and keep that conversation going afterwards. So that is all I have got. And I'm trying to get the tech right. And so here we go. Dimitri is monitoring the tweet stream. If you want to just put your head in and say, hi, I'm monitoring the tweet stream.
Hi, I'm monitoring the tweet stream. You may hear me occasionally.
I want to introduce, because it is such a huge pleasure to introduce the two people that I am sitting with today. Christy McGill is the Executive Director of the Healthy Communities Coalition in Lyon and Storey Counties in Northern Nevada. And Christy is a fellow at Creating the Future, and I have had the privilege to work with Christy for about a year now, learning about the incredible work she is doing from a place of generosity and gratitude in her community in terms of being a community organizer. So, Christy, want to wave and say hello?
Hello!
It's wonderful to have you here.
I'm so excited to be here.
Yay! Rhonda Larch is a consultant working out of Winnipeg, Canada, and Rhonda is the start of this conversation, I have to say. Rhonda is a member of a Facebook group that we have at Creating the Future for consultants to community organizations. And in a conversation that was going on in this group about 6-8 months ago, Rhonda just mentioned almost casually that she has built her consulting practice around generosity. And that was the point where I went, oh, we definitely have to talk about this. So Rhonda, I'm just so thrilled that you are here with us today. Can you talk a little bit about, just tell us what your consulting practice is, what do you consult in, and then I'd like, Christy, if you could share just a little bit about the work that you do. So, Rhonda, let's go first.
Well, thanks very much, Hilde. It really is truly a pleasure to be here, and it's amazing what a casual comment on Facebook can do, eh? My consultancy is to not-for-profits exclusively here in Winnipeg and across the Canadian prairies, and our mission is to support not-for-profit leaders to do their good work better. So we provide training, we provide coaching, peer groups, we've just launched some online training so that we can reach a little bit further, because we have some folks in the north that are feeling a little isolated. So we provide resources and tools and skill building opportunities for folks to do their good work better.
That's great. That's great. And Christy, talk a little bit about the Healthy Communities Coalition.
Well, Healthy Communities Coalition is about groups of people coming together, whether you're citizens or youth or government agencies. And so we come together and we problem solve locally. And so we do all kinds of work, but the base and the premise of our work is collaboration and how we work together to really move our little communities in Nevada to a future we all want to live in.
That's great. Having spent some time with Christy in her community, outside of Reno or Las Vegas, Nevada is immensely rural. And I know that where you are, the same is true, Rhonda, that there's small pockets of urban and lots of rural. So you guys have a lot in common, even though one of you is running a business and one of you is running a community organization. Let's just dive in right now. Let's start with you, Rhonda, because you were sort of the impetus of this. And Christy, start chiming in when it makes sense to you. When you build a business around generosity and gratitude, what does that mean? I mean, most of us are used to hearing that we build a business around bottom line and profit. What does it mean when you say that you've built your business around generosity and gratitude? What does that look like?
Well, first of all, I think that it means that we have a very clear idea of what our mission is and what our values are around that. So when we say that we build our business on generosity, and when I say we, I'm talking about my husband and I, he's a partner in a business, we use generosity as a guiding principle that helps us to make decisions when we are up against an issue or a decision to make. And it helps us to say, okay, we've determined that generosity is a guiding principle for our business, so what does that look like in this particular situation when we're making a decision about how to price something, about what clients we might engage, about what community work that we will take on or not. And so we hold that up front and center as our number one guiding principle when we make decisions.
Wow. Can you give an example? Am I putting you on the spot? Do you have
I can give you hundreds. for sure. I think one of the things that we do most is that we don't look at our competitors as the bad guys. They are people who are also working really hard to make our community a better place. And so we really work very closely with them, and we often meet with them to see what they're doing and how we might support their work. I have a regular quarterly meeting with folks that have been very kind to me when I was starting up my business, and we meet with them to find out what they're doing, how we can support them, are there tools or resources that we can provide for them. And I very regularly make referrals to others when I can't take on business, or when I just know that they can do better than I can at that because they have a different skill set or better better abilities than I do in a particular item. So we don't look at our competitors as bad guys. We look at them as potential colleagues.
Wow. What does it look like for you, Christy, in doing community work? I mean, what does it really look like if you're rooting your work in generosity and gratitude?
Well, it looks like you're a smart business person, really. I know that sounds weird because if you think of, oh, we are a nonprofit and we're rooted in generosity and gratitude, then we really must be, you know, kind of hippy-dippy and all that kind of stuff. But really, it makes good sense because really it builds your social capital. And what you really want when you're looking at the helping system or when you're looking at systems of government, you want strong social capital and so that your social system is strong. And so we really have moved away from competition. You can't believe how much competition there is in the nonprofit sector. And so really what we started to say a couple of years ago is that our table, anyone is welcome at our table. And, you know, there is enough stuff going on in our community that we don't have to compete for each other. We don't have to compete for funds. And so what we've really done is become partners with each other and that anyone is welcome to sit down, join the table, and join the discussion in making our community a better place. What that does is it really starts to stratify people's roles, and people can do more because now we're doing it together instead of independently. We're not just focused on the hospital district to solve every single health need. You know, in rural communities, nonprofits sometimes have this notion in their head that there's not a lot of people and it has to be me. It has to be all my nonprofit or else I'm not going to be able to make it. Well, over the years, we really kind of calm that down. That really, when you have people around you, it's kind of like an ecosystem. You know, one tree in the desert really struggles. But when you have a tree and you have a bush and you have some grasses, you start having an ecosystem. And that's the very same way in our system, our, you know, our little social ecosystem. And so for us, gratitude and that generosity helps build that social capital, and it just makes good sense when you're talking about systems.
The striking similarity between what the two of you were saying is just remarkable.
I was just going to say that resonates with me so amazingly because our business is not generous with expectation of returns necessarily, but I have to tell you that there are, I mean, we'd be disappointed if that was our expectation, I think, but it pays dividends over and over and over again in terms of, you know, how we're seen in the community. It builds top of mind awareness when people are looking for a consultancy or some training. We're thought of very often in our communities. And so it accidentally builds our business, I think, and it hasn't hurt us one bit to be generous with what we can do and what we can share with the community. And although we are a business, I think first and foremost, it's our community that's important. And yes, we make a living out of it, but building that capacity and community is very, very important to us.
I'm wondering if you guys ever encounter people who think that is really weird, who like either don't want to play or just say, you know, this is, you know, you have to compete. I mean, the driving force in both the nonprofit, and I use that term always in quotes because it's such a scarcity term, but the traditional nonprofit world is all about, you know, you go to a fundraising thing, it's how to compete. You go to any business thing, it's how to compete. Do you get pushback on that? How is this different from what other people are doing? How do people respond?
Oh yeah, we've gotten plenty of pushback because it's hard to come out of that competition, and we were really worried when we had our big economic crash, and it really kind of threw our Nevada rural counties. We had numbers that equaled the Depression, so we were really worried. Was this going to hold together during this you know, Great Recession? Was this really going to hold together, or were people going to retreat back into their competitive and, you know, as resources got more and more scarce? We really found the opposite. Another example was we have a group of farmers. We were really hit hard by a scarcity of food, and so we had kids going hungry, and so one of our strategies was to really try to beef up some of our local availability of food. Well, when we first started, the farmers were very competitive with each other because, again, in their mind, small towns, we need to be the only farm, we need to be the only one at the farmer's market. What we really started to look at is the diversification of the farms and them working together and creating a local economy that we could then bring in things like an EBT machine, which is the ability for the farmers to use SNAP benefits. So that people on food stamps could buy from our farm stands. And what we really saw is as the farmers came in, they started to work together, they started to build a local economy of local food, and it propelled all of them forward. We really saw they rose together. Now, we had a couple of our older farmers that were really against this. Man, they gave us heck all the way through. They called us communists and socialists and all this kind of stuff. But in the end, in about 5 years, they were right alongside with the other farmers because they really saw the benefits of creating this local economy and that how truly they were dependent on each other. And so they started in on the diversification. They started looking at how to work together on transporting their goods, not only here in this region, but to Reno and the Tahoe region where the local foods can get a little bit of a higher price. And so they really saw those benefits. But it took about 5 years. It wasn't instantaneous. Now, some of the farmers, they knew right away. They had seen some of the local food movements in other states, and they knew they needed each other. But, you know, it took time.
Yeah, and so it's the proof is in the pudding. What are you finding, Rhonda? Do you get pushback? Do people say, what are you talking about?
Yeah, actually, I have. And one of the funny stories is that I mentor a young consultant who's been on her own now for about 18 or 20 months or so. And when she first started working with me, she kept saying to me, "But why are you doing this? Like, why? What's in it for you to help my business, to help me grow my business?" And it was kind of like, I don't understand why you're doing this. And over time, I mean, some of the reasons that I'm doing it, obviously, are for my succession planning. We're a small business, and I'm nearing retirement or semi-retirement, and our community needs some well-trained, well-developed, competent, confident consultants. We're a small community, and if my mission is really to support and provide resources for not-for-profit leaders, then I need to play a role in making sure that that those leaders are that those folks that can provide that support are coming up behind me. And so she kept saying to me, "But I don't understand. Why are you doing this?" And you know, I encourage others to do it too. First of all, there's a side benefit that's just glorious in terms of watching somebody blossom and gain confidence and learn how to do what I imperfectly do, I guess, and to use those skills. That to me is just, it's been a wonderful side benefit. But for our community, for that needs people who can facilitate appropriately, who can consult wisely, I think that's why I do it. And she struggled with that. She thought I was being nice to her. And it's not charity. There's a difference, I think, between charity and generosity, and I'd really like to make that distinction. In charity, we give something in expectation maybe of getting something back. Generosity is not about that. Generosity is about living in a place where we give naturally of ourselves and of our time and of our talents without expectation of personal return, and yet the personal return is there always.
Which I guess means that the best charity is when you are giving from a place of generosity.
Right, exactly.
One of the questions that popped up in Twitter, and Susan Detweiler asked, so hello, Susan, what do you say to business gurus like Jim Collins, who wrote Good to Great, that are constantly pushing with the need to be the best? And what does it mean for self-improvement? I mean, we all want to be the best. Christy, you want to make your community the best, and you want to be the best, and Rhonda, you want to be, I mean, we all want to be, maybe the word is, maybe the fallacy is the best. We want to just be amazing, but what do you say to that?
Yeah, I bring up sustainability. Yeah, you can be the best, and so maybe you can be the best in a few years, but really, what is the overall goal of your business, or of your nonprofit, of your community organizing? And if you're all by yourself being the best when you go away, or if something happens, are you going to have others to carry it on? So for me, it's all about sustainability. And if we really want a future that is bright for our communities, we have to know that we are interconnected whether we admit it or not. And so, again, for me, it's really about the sustainability and making sure that all of us are kind of rising together. I'm just going to give you a really quick example. Before we started collaborating, our county got about $100,000 from the federal government as a whole, you know, all the little different grants. Since we've been collaborating, for about 13 years, we bring in over $5 million now. And again, it is because of this collaboration, because that we are at peace, we are generous, we are filled with gratitude to be able to serve our people and to be able to utilize federal taxpayer dollars. And with that comes a confidence and comes a place where other people want to come to. And so it really kind of starts to build you up. And so, yes, you know, I guess being the best, the first is important to somebody, but I think you can be your best and you can bring up the other two people alongside of you to be the best as well. And really it's going to help you sustain your business, your practice, your nonprofit, because you're not going to be all alone and people aren't going to be worried about partnering with you. If you're constantly worried about being the best, who wants to partner with you?
Be someone that other people want to play with.
So I think that people forget that our work as good leaders is to create more good leaders, mm-hmm. not more followers. And when we are insistent on being the best, I think we put ourselves in a place where we aren't doing that, where we get a little bit self-inflated in our egos and we think that we're the only ones that can do this. When I go into a project, my bottom line is not to show off that I know more than anybody else. It's about helping folks to discover what it is within themselves that makes them a good leader or that they already know that they can capitalize on to do or to work with. And so it's not, for me, it's not about being the best. It's about helping people find the best in themselves in their work. And yes, I'm a for-profit business, but my job is always to support those leaders of not-for-profits to do the best they can do. And if I do that thinking that I know it all and that I'm the best, I don't think I'm doing that very well.
I'm picturing not a community organizer and not a consultant who runs a for-profit business and works in the community benefit world. I'm picturing a bike shop, and a bike shop that's working from a place of generosity and thinking, I want other great bike shops in my community. It's a really interesting, you guys both have used the words ecosystem and economy, and you notice that all comes from that eco root, that building a strong economy. If you're the only bike shop left, there's something that happens when you've got other people around you that you're building something that is together. I mean, it's almost, we talk so much at Creating the Future about collective enoughness, that together we have everything we need, that it's only when we're on our own that we feel scarcity. And I was sort of smiling when you guys are talking about being the best, and I'm thinking, well, maybe this is about collective bestness. Maybe this is the town that has three bike shops that are awesome, and we love being awesome together. I don't know how that changes things, but I know that when I've been in communities where for-profit businesses like having really great businesses around them, rather than, yeah, we're a really good bike shop and there's two really crappy ones in town. Right. There's a better feeling when everybody is quote best. It's hard,
right,
to
know. And a great example of that, and it is a bike shop actually, is the I grew up in South Lake Tahoe and we had one bike shop, believe it or not, only one bike shop. But it wasn't until we got about four really good bike shops that they started to build a bike culture in Tahoe. So they put in, they worked together and they put in bike lanes. They worked together and they put rental sites along the bike lanes so that the tourists can come up and rent bikes. They created a group called Tamba, which started to create mountain bike trails along the Sierras, and then they published maps together. So now Lake Tahoe has come from just this kind of cool, you know, used to be a great place to ride your bike, to an actual biking destination, not only for road, but for mountain biking. And so, you know, again, another very clear example of how that synergy and how working together can really create a local economy that is viable.
I also I also have an example, and in our city we have what's called business improvement zones, biz zones, and they are they receive some funding from the city through through taxation, and the really successful biz zones are those that collectively work together as business owners. So there might be 100 or 150 business owners in a zone, and those that are really, really successful work together and support one another's business through collaborative advertising, through collaborative events, through working together on community projects. Those biz zones are ever so much more successful than those that can't get people to come out to meetings or events or to work together. And so I think that there's those biz zones that are very successful have realized that being generous with their time and their resources with one another is good for the collective. And I think that those that haven't quite figured that out yet are still highly dependent and looking for even more funding from the city as opposed to looking from within their own membership for to make things better.
You're raising the question that was coming up for me, which is that collaborative and collective impact is such the buzzwords these days. And we see it in both the for-profit and non-profit worlds. How is being working from a place of generosity and gratitude at the core of your being, how is that different than the collaborations that we see out there?
Maybe I can start, and I think that it stems from the openness of spirit, if you like. I think that lots of businesses have recognized that there are certainly some benefits from being collaborative and working together, but there's still that element of what's in it for me as opposed to what's in it for the collective. And I think those that are truly generous are looking to see success from everybody that's participating, not just their own personal success. And I think when you get over that, looking for your own personal success and looking for the success of the collective, your own personal success comes anyway because it's part of that system. But I think there's a generosity or an openness of spirit that has to be there to be truly considered operating from a place of generosity.
Right, and it's kind of like operating from a continuum. So sometimes traditional businesses will start out through that collective outcomes or collaboration or networking, and that's a great first step. You got to start somewhere, and so just to, you know, continue to cultivate those activities and to show how bringing the generosity into the center of things, and I really have to give props and say thank you to so much of the younger generation for teaching us, the older generation, this, because I think they get it. If you look at their social networking on their phones and what they've done with community organizing, it's a great lesson to learn from them, and it's just been such my pleasure to watch the younger generation take hold of this and run with it. And you know, they feel very strongly about keeping the internet free space, and so that people, you know, it's really kind of fun to watch. And I think if we ever start to stumble, they're a great resource for us to always look back to and help us guide.
Yeah, it's you know, I'm thinking about that whole sharing economy. I'm thinking about Uber and Lyft for getting a ride someplace. I'm thinking about Airbnb, where people are sharing their homes. And I think you're right, Christy. I think that there is that continuum. There's the folks who are saying, wow, if I can share my home, I can maybe make my mortgage payment this month, or this will be some extra income, or et cetera. And it's very me focused. But the more time you spend in Airbnb, and I travel a lot and I spend a lot of time in Airbnb, you're actually getting to know people, and you're forming those connections. And the people who are sincerely generous, and I'm thinking about the homes that I've stayed in, the people who are sincerely generous in offering their home and filling the fridge and saying, drink the beer and you know, it's a very different feeling in their home, and they're getting recommended very differently than the people are doing the things that Airbnb puts on their checklist and says, here's how you should market, and here's what you, and it's just a very, very different feeling in the home. And again, that's part of that sharing economy where people are doing it for very different reasons, but that's entirely coming out of social media and young folks.
Mm-hmm. I love the part about Airbnb, you know, and some of them have it, and it's my favorite part about it is when you get a person that wants to share their love for the place they live, and that's the absolute best part. I mean, a hotel cannot replicate that, and so, you know, that, again, it's that relationship, sharing what we love with each other. It's awesome.
What do you find that rooting your work in generosity and gratitude makes possible? What is it? What results from that? That we haven't already talked about, and stories and examples if you've got it.
For us, because we are focused on a helping network, it really opens the door to see the traditional clients or our fellow community members as part of the solution, that everybody has value and everybody is worthy. And instead of some social worker coming in to fix something, we are working side by side together trying to make the community a better and a stronger place. And this is, for us, this is the key. We don't have enough social workers to fix everything. We're out here kind of by ourselves. You know, we're kind of hell-pressed to bring anyone with, you know, advanced degrees into our communities. And so we really have to be self-reliant on each other. And we really have to start exploring in our system how to not look at people as end users or as consumers and start looking at people as contributors. And, you know, coming with a sense of generosity and gratitude, you know, we could not be in the place we're in if our people weren't alongside of us, if our citizens, if our elders, if our people who are on disability, you know, weren't volunteering 40 hours. I mean, it's really humbling for me. I get paid in my work, and it's extremely humbling for me to be working alongside volunteers that do not get paid. And sometimes they give 40 hours a week. And to be able to do that and to move forward, and, you know, I would just about do anything for them. They are amazing. And, I can't believe I get paid for this kind of work. But anyways, you know, so for us, that's been a really important piece.
You know what? There is a quote, I wish I could remember it verbatim, but there's a quote by Robert Thurman that the sense of power that we get comes from when we give and not from when we receive, because giving makes us feel like we have something strong that we can share. And I wish I had the quote directly in front of me. What's striking to me when you're talking, Christy, and I love, oh my gosh, I'm going to write down and quote you forever, moving from users and consumers to contributors. We hear so much about moving from consumers to citizens, but moving to contributors, what you're actually doing is bringing out the generosity in those people. You're tapping the generosity in them and building on letting them give.
Mm-hmm. And it's endless. And that's what's going to fix our system, is that endless generosity of our people, because we are so blessed. We are blessed to have people that are willing to do so. And I think there are probably people like that in every community.
Yeah. So, Rhonda, what do you find it makes possible in a business sense?
Well, I can probably only speak for myself as a business person, but I think for me it's led to things that I didn't think I would ever do. It's opened my heart in ways that I'm still astonished every day as to how that's happened. An example of this is I was asked a few years back to participate in be an adult leader in a youth participation project called Gimli, Youth Community Partnership Project. And what it was meant to help young people to learn how to move to that collaboration and participation in community. When I was first asked to do it, there was some funding, and there was an expectation that I would be a paid consultant to the project. And unfortunately, we had a change in government, and the funding melted away, and I could not continue with the project because the kids were amazing. They taught me more about generosity and participation and collaboration and communication and loving your neighbor than I could ever have taught them in a million years. And I couldn't walk away, even though it was an hour and a half drive every time we met one way, and so an hour and a half back, and our roads aren't always that great in the winter. I couldn't not go. I could not participate. And it just, the opening of my perspective because of the generosity of these kids and how they participated in the project and became active citizens at the same time was not to be, I had no way of anticipating that would be the outcome. So yeah, I gave a little bit of time and maybe some expertise, maybe, I don't know. But what I gained in return was far beyond what I gave, far beyond.
So I'm thinking about a business with 100 employees, and the power of rooting generosity in, you know, a lot of the conversation that we've been having as a relatively new organization at Creating the Future, with our first full-time staff person who's not the co-founders here. The conversation that we've been having at the board level is how do we create workplace policies that bring out the best in our employees, which one would assume is what every business would want, ideally. Most of the structures that we have these days are not set up around bringing out the best in our employees. They're usually preventing against the worst in our employees. But it's occurring to me as you're talking, you know, I was thinking about that personal fulfillment piece, Rhonda. How generosity plays a role in how we react with employees and how we encourage those employees to act with others. That brings personal fulfillment into the workplace.
No doubt about it. Let me tell you a little bit of a negative story that just happened in the last week or so. My very dear friend works for a company, a large company that you in the States would recognize the name of, and she works from her home and gets together infrequently with her colleagues, and was invited to a Christmas lunch last week, and her boss instructed the waitress to deliver their bills to each of the people individually. And we're talking maybe 15 people or so. Her lunch cost her $10, and she is considering leaving the company because she was so astonished that she could be invited to an event like that and the company wouldn't be generous enough to pay for their lunch. So in terms of employee dedication or care for the company, in one fell swoop for about $150 or $200 bill, that person destroyed everything that the company had built for their employees. So I think that being generous as an employer doesn't take a lot. It doesn't have to be expensive. I mean, it was a very, very small amount of money that my friend had to actually put out for her own lunch, but it was so distasteful to her that she's a really good employee. She's actually considering leaving because she cannot believe that a company could treat her like that in this season. So I think that's an example of what happens when our policies aren't generous. When our policies are generous, I think that people become committed to their organization, to their company. I think they become committed to their team. They give more freely of their skills and their abilities. They work to make sure that each other are successful when they believe that the company is being generous with them. So I think that developing policies that are generous are really, really important. You know, there's more women working in organizations now than in any other time in our history. Women have different roles in their families. What does it mean to have policies that are generous and that will allow them to participate with their families when they're needed? We have very diverse workplaces, people who are, you know, from different cultures than we are. Christmas and Easter are standard holidays in most of North America, but what does it mean to be generous in our policies that would allow people, you know, Muslims or Hindus to participate in their holy holidays as, you know, as freely and as fully and as appropriately? So I think policy development and our attention to details that make, that matter to employees really is an important demonstration of our generosity as businesses.
There's a lot of listening in there. A lot of how do we listen and be mindful of people. It's that whole sense of codifying this. What does it take? What do either community leaders of all kinds, and Christy, you work with community leaders from the governor on down to average folk, and for business leaders in large businesses and small businesses, what does it take? What do they need to believe? What do they need to value? What kinds of structures do they need to put in place? What do they need to have? What does it take to build your work around generosity and gratitude?
Well, it's the great news is that it's easy. And you said a word that's really important, and that's listen. So I'm just going to give you a quick example. Nevada was being fined because we were not processing our welfare benefits quickly enough. You're supposed to be at a benchmark, I think, at 10 days, and we were at a benchmark of 35. And really, we had a new person come in and take over, and what he did first was listen to the employees. There was constant turnover. Nobody wanted to be a welfare worker in Nevada, so he had constant turnover. He had vacancy rates, standard vacancy rates of 30 to 40%. And so he started to listen to his employees and his people, and what they really wanted most of all was the power to help people. And believe it or not, their system, they felt like they worked in a system that did not allow them to do that. And so he just made some really easy changes that took probably a couple of weeks. He allowed them the power to qualify people, whether they qualified for SNAP or not. He allowed people the ability to process the applications instead of having to go through a management team. He really gave them some leeway, and some crazy things happened. He's now at only a vacancy rate of 20%. We have not brought it up to the you know, 20-day mark, but they're very close to that. And it just took a few, you know, really listening and being gracious to their employees enabled their employees to be gracious to the people they serve. And so to me, it's really a mirrored effect. If you have bad customer service, probably you don't have really good management that's good to their people. So it really is a mirrored effect. And, if, you know, whether you're a business of 200 or 2,000, it makes good sense to be generous to your employees. Because you're talking sustainability and all that kind of good stuff. So, anyways, I think it's extremely important and easy.
I would, that resonates so much with me. I agree with that entirely. I have a client here in Winnipeg who is it's an intake agency for the child protection system in Manitoba, and one of their biggest complaints over the years has been, and people, their employees complain about this too, is that, you know, we don't make enough money here compared to what social workers, for example, could make in the government system or in larger agencies. And, you know, our turnover is extremely high. We keep losing people, and, you know, it's very discouraging. And their CEO started to work with us and to work with their people and to listen. And what they came up with was that it made good sense to consider themselves as being generous to the community in terms of building really great social workers that would go on to work elsewhere, They knew that they weren't going to stay there forever. They were going to go on to work elsewhere. But what they could do for the community and for the system, which is not all that functional, actually, in Manitoba sometimes, what they could do best would be to really train people well before they left, and that that would be their generous gift to the system to ensure that those people were the very best social workers that they could be once they left there. And it was a totally different way of looking at it, and a mind shift for the employees. They suddenly became less concerned about the fact that there was a large turnover in terms of their social workers, and they became more focused on giving them the skills that they needed when they moved out into other jobs, largely in government, which is where we can all use a little humanity, I think, and well-trained people. So yeah, you're right. Listening and acting on those things are really important.
Anything else that is standing out for you that you've seen generous companies do that others are not doing? Generous government? Yeah, Rhonda, you're shaking your head. Go.
I am. A couple of things. I think performance management is a real area of a problem, I think. We unfortunately, we somehow couple performance management with discipline, and therefore everybody's afraid of the T when they get their evaluation. Everybody's concerned about, you know, will this is, you know, what's going to happen on the day of my evaluation. And I think that if we start thinking of discipline and performance management as two separate things, that's a really generous act. Performance management should be about encouraging people to be the best that they can be and helping them to grow personally and professionally. And when you couple that with the more disciplinary things, like, that's just wrong. It just doesn't build people who are committed to being the best they can be. And so the best example I have of this is I have a client who came to me, and she said, the CEO of the organization, she said to me, I want you to work with a team of my people to develop a performance growth project with them that will be suitable for them, that they can buy into and that they want to participate in. And part of that must be a personal portfolio that people can take with them when they leave here to show what they did here that allowed them to grow both personally and professionally. And that, I have to tell you, that piece of work has become a cornerstone of my performance management work with all of my clients now, because it was a generous way of saying to the employees, what you want and what you need in terms of your growth is important to us as an agency, and we're willing to invest in that. And I think that if more folks were willing to uncouple the discipline from the performance management and focus on their people's growth as a generous act of faith in them, that organizations would be much better off.
Yeah, we had a turnaround, and our turnaround story happened with a small town, Silver Springs in Nevada, and we had one medical provider leave us after another, primarily because we did not have a good diversification of payment. So many of our people were on Medicaid, and the providers felt like they could not sustain themselves. And then they said, well, you know, once, you know, they say they really want us and we come in and then they don't show up for their appointments and blah, 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 blah. So we started a strategy called the Health Hub, and we really started listening to the people that were going to be using the services. And we said, together, what are we going to be doing together to promote each other and to make sure that we still don't lose another medical provider? And this particular medical provider was a large one out of Reno, and it's called Renown. And we did not want to lose them again. They were losing revenue. The people weren't coming, so they joined this health hub. We really talked about things like, you know, how do we want to treat people when they come in the front door, you know, and really the bottom line that we came out with was whatever it takes. You know, if someone comes through the front door, we need to meet their needs, whatever it takes. And that whatever it takes, how they could accomplish that was strong ties to each other. So if somebody came in and they had a cold, but then they were also struggling with depression, they then walked that person over to the mental health department, which was right next door, and make sure they had the mental health there. So the long and the short of it was, is we still have Renowned. And because they kind of moved from looking at getting people in the front door and getting that Medicaid reimbursement to when that person walks through the front door, how do we get their needs met no matter what? They've actually had, they built their client rate. Their percentages went from a 40% no-show rate down to a 15% no-show rate. So they had great increases that way. And then they also, people thought, yeah, this is a place, you know, word of mouth, this is a place you go and you get your needs met, which is exactly what a primary care office should be all about. And so they really started seeing Renown as a place that they could go and, yeah, maybe, you know, they're struggling with depression or addiction or something of that sort, but they saw that as a doorfront. And as a result, we have an urban renowned office that's able to maintain itself in a very rural place because of the strong interconnections, but also because they've shifted their focus from Medicaid reimbursement to, you know, how do we make sure our people get their needs met.
Are they a for-profit company, Christy?
Oh, yes, they're for-profit.
Yeah. It's so consistent. The thread that I am hearing is that if we treat other people, whether they're employees, whether they're customers, whether they're community members, whether they're rich or they're poor, if we treat other people in ways that are generous and kind and grateful, that it doesn't matter, good things happen. Why does that sound surprising? Or why does it not sound surprising?
we started the conversation because the community was, you know, kept complaining about it. We started the conversation by the potential clients making breakfast for the front desk staff of Renown. And that's how we started it. And it really went quickly, actually. A couple of months of breakfasts, and 6 months later, you know, the front desk staff is doing whatever it takes to make sure they meet the needs of the people. So it was a great transition.
feed the stomach, feed the soul. I can't believe we've only got 10 minutes left here. What I would love to leave folks with is, are there steps that people can take right now to put gratitude and generosity to work in their day-to-day work? Are there questions they can be asking? Are there steps that they can take? What are simple things that people can do right now to start in their day-to-day work lives to put generosity and gratitude into place?
I think there are. And I think that I think it starts with the questions. I sent you an email a little while back. I stumbled across something from Chris Carr, who is the author of Crazy Sexy Cancer, and she was on a hangout not unlike this, and somebody asked her, like, why do you use your website and your notoriety to promote animal protection issues? And her answer was so it really stimulated something in me, I guess. She said, I don't have to, but why wouldn't I? And I think that's a question that we can start. I don't have to be generous. I don't have to, you know, display gratitude in my work. You know, I'll probably get a few customers. I'll probably make some money. But why wouldn't I? Why wouldn't I want to be a generous, seen as a generous business that's promoting the good of our community, that's working towards a common end? Why wouldn't I want to do that? So I think that's the number one question for me. The other question is something that we did as a business that I think a lot of businesses don't do. They just go into business and start serving customers. And I think we really took the time to define what our mission statement is. And I know that sounds really weird, but if you have a mission statement and a vision statement in a not-for-profit organization, everybody expects that. If you have a mission statement and a vision statement in a for-profit business, people think, oh, that's kind of weird. But I think it's really, really important. And then defining those values that are important to you. Generosity for us was the big one. When we define that and use that value and that guiding principle in our decision making, I think we make better decisions. So how would it help our business, or how would it help the community if we decided that gratitude was central to our business? How would that look? What would we do different? where would we start with that? How could we allow our employees to have some time, paid time, to participate in community events, to volunteer? What would that do for their connection to our company? What would that do for their connection to the community? And how would those two things come together? So I think there's lots of things that people can do, lots of questions they can ask.
It's wonderful, and I do love the reminder that just making a list of values is a fun exercise, but until you're constantly asking, what does this look like in practice, then that's values. Values are only valuable when they're in action. So it's a really good reminder. Christy, what are you thinking?
I always...
Go ahead, Rhonda. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I was just going to say that I work with my clients all the time, and you know, they might have a good mission statement in place or a vision statement, but rarely do they have anything in terms of values beyond, you know, respect and integrity. And I always say to them, well, you know, I would expect that of you, of any organization. So I want you to talk now about the deeper values, the guiding principles that you're going to use to make decisions, that you're going to say, what does this decision look like when we hold up this value? And I think we can do that as businesses as well.
You know, one of my favorite stories about values in action is a hospital CEO that a colleague of ours, one of our fellows, actually, Christy, Sally Kasner, who is in your class, she and her husband worked with a hospital, and the CEO of that hospital would walk around, and in every meeting, every staff meeting he had, every high-level meeting he would have, the first thing they would open up their meetings with was the question, what evidence have you seen since our last meeting of our values in action? And isn't it beautiful? Isn't it just, yeah, it's one of my absolute favorite questions. What evidence have you seen of our values in action? So, Christy, what do you find? What are...
I'm writing that down.
Yeah, oh yeah, definitely. definitely. I heard that about 10 years ago, and I told them I was going to use it every single time I could and have. What are the steps that you see, Christy, that people can take, questions they can ask or steps that they can take to put generosity first and foremost, gratitude and generosity, into action?
Yeah, I think you can take two really easy ones. And one, if you are blessed to have a loving grandma, listen to what grandma has said, and that, you know, your grandmother always reminded you to treat people like you want to be treated and how you want to treat your family. So if you're running a business or you are seeing clients, you think, is this a place that I would want my mother to come to, if I'd want my children to come to? I think if we really ground it that personally and make it our business, would we want our son to work for us? Would we want our daughter to work for us? And are we, having that enabling power? And second is, I think that whether you're a parent or not, we all have a primal need in us to nurture and to further the next generation. And I, you know, and a lot of that is based in gratitude and generosity. So allow that to happen. Allow that primal need to come out. And, you know, so many times we are taught it's business. You got to separate business from the personal. And I don't. If you separate business from personal, some scary things can happen. And some unethical things. And so for me, you don't separate. You bring them together, and you treat people like your grandmother told you to treat people, and you allow yourself that primal urge to really give, you know, gratitude and grace and generosity, so that then that next person, then they can go out and do that to your clients or to your customers or to whomever you serve. So two easy steps.
Wonderful. Wonderful. I wish we had another hour. Go ahead.
I will never think about this again without thinking of my grandmother, Christy.
We have just a couple minutes left. Is there anything that is standing out from today's conversation? And I would ask anyone who is watching, tweet to the hashtag CTFuture. If there's anything standing out for you, what popped for you from today's conversation? Is there anything standing out for either of you, Christy and Rhonda, as we draw to a close?
I think the thing that's popped out. Go ahead, Christy.
No, go ahead.
Christy,
I think the thing that's popped out for me. Okay, good. Yep.
Christy, go.
All right, sorry. No, I forgot what I was going to say. No, the main thing that's popped for me is that when I talk about this and when I practice it, I feel calm. I feel peaceful. I'm not worried about the bottom line and the dollar and all that kind of stuff because I know it's going to come. You know, when I find myself getting really stressed about money or something of that sort, I've really taken my hand off the pulse. And so I just, you know, if some of you out there are feeling kind of that stress around their business and when's the, you know, how are you going to make ends, you know, we've all been there. But to kind of let that go and to say, let the work stand for itself. And if it's good work, it will be sustained. And there's such a peace in that. And that the good work is rooted in generosity and gratitude. And so I just really want to, you know, portray there's such a peace to it and a calm. And it feels great.
Thank you. Rhonda, what is popping for you? What stood out for you today?
Well, what stood out for me is that we tend to divide business and community benefit organizations into two different sectors, and I think really the bottom line is the same for both of us. We there's a bottom line of profit perhaps in a business, but I think the bottom line really is about community capacity, community development, collaboration, and yeah, this conversation has brought it even closer for me, pulled those two things closer to me, and how do we all work together for the betterment of our community, whether we're not for profit or not.
Yeah, and in closing, I think if I were to reflect, and there is just so much that you guys shared. I can't wait to listen to this again, probably two or three times. The fact that we're all people and we try to make these rules that are just very inhumane, and that when we treat each other as the delightful parts of our humanity and not the crappy parts of our humanity, that it's amazing the delightful parts grow. So, and this has been one of those delightful parts for me. I'm so deeply grateful to both of you for first of all being part of my life and enriching my life in the way that you do and sharing who you are with everybody out there. And I'm just looking forward to continuing this conversation. So thank you very, very much to both of you and to everybody who has been part of this conversation. And if you want to keep tweeting about it or post your thoughts, post your observations in the comments at the blog post, and we will just keep this conversation going. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.